The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
Welcome to the Clark Howard Show, where it's all about you learning ways to keep more of what you make. Coming up in 20 minutes, today's Clarkrageous moment is devoted to something you need to do if you shop online. Because there is a bullseye target on you right now shopping online that I need to warn you about, but I have a good solution. And coming up in a half hour, oh boy, there is a new way to enforce parking violations that is, oh, it's going to fire you up. Wait till you hear this invention in just 30 minutes. I'm going to talk right now. If I didn't say our web address, clark.com, you have a question for me, clark.com/ask. I am so grateful to the teachers, instructors, professors that I had through my years as a student. You know, the education I received has made such a difference in my life, the education I received at all levels. And teachers are so underappreciated and in many places in the country underpaid. But to add insult to injury, teachers are often cheated so badly on their retirement plans, it makes me sick. Because we talk the good game about how appreciative we are about teachers, and then we leave them as sitting ducks. Teachers generally around the country are covered by a crooked retirement plan called a 403B, where if you work at a traditional employer, you have access to a 401K. People, by the way, at nonprofits, hospitals, things like that, might also be in an inferior 403B. But it gets so ugly. Do you know 403B plans generally don't disclose what kind of fees you're paying? And it's not unusual for a teacher to pay 50 times the fees per year that somebody might pay in a 401k or in their own IRA. And then trying to find out what the fees are is an exercise in frustration, because the insurance companies that rip off teachers don't want them to know how they're being taken advantage of. Why would they? Because the insurance company is fattening its pockets at the expense of a teacher having security in his or her retirement. But I saw something in the New York Times that truly made this even worse. New York Times investigation found that the main teachers' union in the country was ripping off its members, and the union-sponsored 403B, charging massive expenses to teachers that were in the union plan. How disgusting. I want you to know a couple of things. First, if you are a teacher, there's one organization that offers 403Bs that if it's available to you, it is the one you should use. It's called TIAA, TIAA.org. If you have your 403B with them, you will pay typically 1/10 to 1/20 of the fees that you would pay to one of the ripoff insurance companies. It is a completely different thing, because you will end up in retirement likely with 50% more money, putting in the same money each pay period as a teacher, than somebody who goes into one of the ripoff plans with an insurance company. If you don't have a low-cost plan available to you for your 403B, and there is no match, you should ignore the 403B that's offered to you and only put money into your own Roth IRA. You're allowed to put in up to $5,500 a year in it. I've got my guide, investment guide. You'll see the choices, the companies, the actual investments you should go into in your own Roth IRA. The law needs to be changed, and teachers should have access to the same rights and the same quality plans that are available to people who work for private companies. Same should be true for people who work for nonprofits and hospitals. The 403B should be put in permanent timeout. And teachers, take responsibility for your own retirement. You are an educator. You educate people. Educate yourself about the plan you're in and see what you're actually paying. And the threshold is you should never be paying more than 0.5% per year, including all in, all fees, to be in that 403B. With an insurance company, it's not at all unusual for you to be paying at least 2%, and in many cases more than 2%, which is absolutely outrageous, scandalous, and unacceptable. Ken is with us. Hello, Ken. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Clark. How are you today?
Great, thank you. You have a question for me that is one that confuses people no end about freezing your credit. Hit me with it.
I do have a question about freezing your credit, but first I want to publicly thank you for all your support for the military and the veterans. I'm a retiree myself, so thank you for your support.
Well, thank you for your service. Which branch are you in?
I was in the Army for 20 years.
Okay. Well, so you smart man making it to 20 years and getting what's referred to as the half-pay pension.
Exactly, exactly.
Good job.
My question on freezing your credit is, when a person freezes their credit, does their credit score also freeze, or can it fluctuate?
Yeah, your credit score will fluctuate as it always did.
Okay.
So what happens is your existing credit continues as it is. What a credit freeze does is a pretty simple thing. It makes it so that someone who is trying to pretend to be you and attempting to get credit as if they're you cannot get credit because they don't have a secret code that unlocks your credit so that a bank or credit card company or whoever can check your credit.
Okay.
So they can't check your credit, so they won't give you credit. Now, okay. As far as your score, if you want to check your score, usually you're not going to easily be able to with your credit frozen either. But if you want to monitor your credit score, you may or may not have heard me talk about something called Credit Karma.
I have, yes, I have.
So if you were to register with Credit Karma before you freeze your credit, you will then be able to still continue to monitor your credit and your score after you've frozen your credit.
Okay, I'm already registered with Credit Karma.
Oh, great. So you freeze your credit, you still have access to all that information, Ken. It will be available to you, and it won't be a mystery to you. How you're doing with your credit, is your score going sideways, up, or down? You'll know. And Grant is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Grant.
Hello, Clark. How are you?
Great.
Well,
how can I help you?
I am looking to travel to Italy and wanted your opinion on renting a car and what kind of insurance coverage I should get.
Well, you know, Italy, they assume that any car rental you bring back, you're going to have damaged. You ever driven in Italy?
Yes.
Oh, so you know that's not a joke, right?
Yes.
It's a tough combat sport to drive a vehicle in Italy. Are you going to be in northern Italy or southern Italy?
Southern, Naples, and then down to the Amalfi Coast.
Okay. Now, have you driven on the Amalfi before?
No.
Okay. So take a sedative. Just kidding. Like driving like you've never seen on the Amalfi Coast. So it is a high risk kind of driving.
Okay.
So you got to be prepared for that. And yeah, there's a pretty good chance you might ding up the car a bit in southern Italy, much more so than in northern Italy. So the question on insurance is what coverage do you have from your U.S.-based auto insurer? Have you talked to them?
I have not. I'm probably going to rent through one of the major car rental agencies, and they say that Italy requires certain coverage.
Well, there's okay, that is something that is overblown in what you're told by the car rental companies. There is a basic amount of coverage that comes in your rental in Italy. And if you go read the briefings on TripAdvisor on renting a car in Italy, you'll get a better feel for what you really need to do. But the most important thing before you go is to check with your own automobile insurer and see if they do cover you for temporary use in a foreign country. And if they do, that means you're covered pretty much the same outside the country as you would be if you had a wreck in the United States.
Okay.
And then on top of that, you likely have a credit card that gives you what's known as supplemental or secondary coverage for rental of a car. And whatever your own automobile insurance doesn't cover, they then step in for. Now, I've rented cars in Italy at least 10 times, and I've had the hard sell put on me at the counter. And when I rented a car in Italy in March, they put a €5,000 hold on my card because I wouldn't take out their phony insurance stuff. And I guess they're hoping that the credit limit won't take it, and then I'll be forced to buy the stuff from them.
Right.
But if you do have coverage from your own automobile insurer, and then you add on top of it, icing on the cake, the coverage you get from a credit card, then don't let them intimidate you into buying full coverage.
Suppose my credit card doesn't have that additional coverage.
Well, one thing before you go is, if you have time, you want to get a card that doesn't charge you foreign currency transaction fees anyway.
I have that covered.
Yeah. All right. So if you have a card that's no foreign currency transaction fees, those cards almost 100% of the time will have car rental coverage with them, and maybe luggage coverage and other things for travelers, because they're making something to differentiate themselves, having special privileges for travelers. So make those phone calls. Do you only have one credit card anyway?
No, I have several.
Okay. So you almost certainly have one card out of the ones you have, or more, that will cover you for temporary use of a rental car.
Okay.
Only if you run out of all options, I guess I'm trying to say, do you want to pay for the extremely overpriced stuff the car rental agency would charge you, or rent your car from Auto Europe, that offers all-in, all-inclusive rentals where you don't get the high-pressure sale at the car rental counter, and the all-inclusive from them in advance is much cheaper than buying a la carte at the counter.
I did see that online, so that is a good option then.
Yeah, Auto Europe is a very reliable, good renter for rentals in Europe. And I've used them in the past, and I have never had a problem using Auto Europe. I have a special warning for you, as we are in the midst of the Christmas shopping season now, and it's about the online shopping you're doing. It's today's Clark Rageous moment.
Scams, ripoffs, outrages. It's a Clark Rageous moment.
As retailers are adopting more and more of the chip readers, the ability for crooks to hack in and steal your credit card number is going steadily downward. So if I'm a criminal, I go where the easiest opportunity is, the lowest hanging fruit. And this Christmas shopping season, it's online shopping, where the system is still not secure, and it's really easy for criminals to intercept credit card numbers and debit card numbers when you shop online. The fraud level is getting to be enormous. Now, if you use a credit card, a little bit of hassle with saying, hey, this is a phony charge and all that, and having a new card issued. If you use a debit card for online shopping, wow. Where do I even start with the problems for that? Number one, if the merchant doesn't deliver the goods that you ordered or delivers the wrong thing or whatever with a credit card, you have full dispute rights. With a debit card, you have none. If your number's compromised on that debit card, it's your checking account that gets emptied. With the credit card, all that happens, phony charges posted. With this being the greatest vulnerability in the payment system right now, here's what I want you to do. Use only a credit card for shopping online, and use a credit card that you only use for online shopping. In other words, maybe one of those back of the wallet cards that you've got in a drawer or whatever, you don't use it anymore. Use it as your exclusive online shopping card. That way, it's the greatest likely card to be compromised. And so only that card ends up having to be shut down. But even easier, if the card is compromised, you're much more likely quicker to notice it. Because if you're only using that card for online shopping, it's so easy for you to detect fraud. You see a charge, a store you know you didn't shop at. If you use the same card in traditional shopping and restaurants and all that, that you use shopping online, you're less likely to notice a fraudulent charge on it. So that's why I want you to have your online card only used for online. It makes it much easier for you to protect yourself and track the crooks.
All right, you have a great business, but your website, not so much. Let's change that. Introducing Wix ADI, artificial design intelligence that creates a stunning website for you. With all the things you need to look amazing online, images, videos, and professional text, giving you more time to focus on what really matters, your great business. Go to Wix.com. Create your stunning website today.
Hey everybody, I'm Tim Barnacle.
And I'm Harry Hill. We're the hosts of a new podcast called How I Got Here. Everybody has a story, and we've heard great ones from people all over the country.
People like Tom Brokaw,
Ken Burns, Maria Shriver, and Larry King.
You can listen to How I Got Here on podcastone.com.
And please subscribe to the show on iTunes.
Sometimes progress may be a step backwards. Welcome to the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you learning ways to keep more of what you make on the web at Clark.com. If you have a question, Clark.com/ask. So, parking tickets are, they're a plague around the country as local governments starve for cash, come up with every possible rule violation for everywhere you park to try to issue you a ticket. And people don't like paying those tickets. So you avoid paying a number of them. And in many cities, they might use what used to be called the Denver boot. It's the thing that gets placed on the wheel, locks your car down, and you're stuck. You then have to go somewhere, pay, blah, blah, blah. Well, listen what I read in the Philadelphia Inquirer. There is a new thing called the Barnacle that's already being used elsewhere in Pennsylvania, now being looked at for use in Philadelphia. Probably wouldn't be long till revenue-starved communities around the country adopt the Barnacle. It attaches to your windshield with suction cups that are secured with a pump. This plastic shield, the Barnacle, grips your windshield and blocks your view out of the car. So you are completely unable to leave. If you try to leave by sticking your head out the window and drive, it actually alarms. And how ugly. So my problem with this is a way of forcing you to pay a ticket. And you could see aggressive city and county governments around the country using the windshield blocker, the barnacle, for your very first ticket just to make sure they get paid. What happens if you end up stranded in a dangerous part of town and you can't leave? And there you are, prisoner to your car that's been locked down by the barnacle. You know, the first responsibility of a local government is to provide for its citizens and to ensure our safety and security. And this idea may just thrill mayors and county commissioners and city council members as a way of boosting revenue. But in my book, it's just mean. Chiquita is with us. Hi, Chiquita. Welcome to the Clark Howard Show.
Hi, Clark.
Chiquita, you're looking out for your daughter. What's going on with her?
Well, my daughter, she's 22 now. When she was 18, she got involved with a girl fight, you know, how teenagers do. And her and a couple of her friends were charged and convicted of misdemeanor assault. So, of course, her already being 18, this follows her. The state that we reside in is very strict on any type of criminal convictions, and she's having a very tough time getting someone to give her a chance as far as employment. She wants to be a nurse. She's actually in school doing the prerequisites to go to nursing school. And this is not a barrier crime. However, she's having trouble getting regular jobs, and she's getting very discouraged.
Because anybody who asks on an application, have you ever been convicted of a crime? Some employers will only ask, have you ever been convicted of a felony? Others right. will ask, have you ever been convicted of a crime?
Mm-hmm.
And this is very controversial. I have a friend who has a very sophisticated and successful prison release ministry where they mm-hmm. bring in people who have been convicted of a crime and put them through essentially a post-release rehab ministry, and then they help them get ready for the job market, even help with job placement. And I know from talking to my friend who founded and runs this ministry that they face a challenge with some employers who won't even give them the time of day to talk to them about hiring one of their clients.
Right.
And then others will say, okay, I'll try it one time. And once they get an employer to give somebody a chance, often they'll realize, hey, this is somebody who made a mistake in his or her life. They've turned it around, and they're a great worker, and they're more open to hiring somebody again. You
right.
can't change the fact that there are employers that are closed-minded that will not consider her because of something she did wrong when she was 18. But the good news is, particularly with a misdemeanor conviction, it is not anywhere close to everybody that eliminates her from consideration. And she'll find that seeking employment with smaller employers will be a much, much better outcome for her finding work than going to larger employers.
Right. And often, even her putting this on her application, they will interview her, and she'll win over the people at the local staff. But once they send it up, the people who actually take care of the personnel stuff will be like, no, it's not a policy, but, you know, if we have other options, we'd rather choose these other options and take a gamble on this person.
And that only validates what I said, Chiquita.
Right.
That with the larger, more bureaucratic companies, she's not going to be given a chance in a lot of cases. And that's why smaller local firms are going to be the key for her.
Okay.
Now, as far as the conviction as a teenager, have you found out, does your state have any program where she can eventually have that record expunged?
No, in our state, they do not expunge. After 7 to 10 years, you can write the governor, and they'll do what's called a simple pardon, which means it'll stay on your record, but it'll say pardon. But that's very few and far between the cases that they will even do that for. But this has only happened 3 years ago, so she's got a long time before she can even apply for that.
Well, I would say to you that this is a case where you're a motivated mom, and I would go sit down with your member of your state legislature.
Okay.
And present the problem, because it is across America, the number of people who have been either arrested or convicted of crimes is a giant number. And if we limit options to people who have had a chance to mature or reform or turn a life around, and we leave them forever with a mark of shame, it hurts society and it makes somebody more likely to turn back to a life of crime. And so we need to have a system that allows for people who turn a life around to be able to have more options again.
Exactly.
So you're directly affected. Your daughter is affected. I think, how does your daughter present herself at 22?
Very different than 18. She's matured a lot.
I think you take her with you to sit down with your state legislator.
Okay.
Because there also is a clear distinction with the difference in someone who is convicted of a misdemeanor, usually, and someone who's been convicted of a felony.
Okay.
And so I think if you're motivated, take it on as a challenge.
Okay. That's great advice. I appreciate that.
Okay. And best to you and best to her.
Thank you.
Our number is 877-87-CLARK. Yvette is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Yvette. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Great, thank you. How can I be of service to you?
First of all, me and my husband, Dave, were big fans of you.
Thank you.
And I'm just wondering, I have excellent credit, 826, last time I checked. And
826
I would like to know
Wait. Don't run past that. You're 826 out of 850?
Yes.
Do you know what they call you behind your back?
No, what?
They call you golden. When somebody's credit score is in the 800s on the 850 scale, you are considered to be so good with how you handle credit that the banks would rather come borrow from you. So congratulations for that.
And my husband.
Well, that's good.
Well, my question is, I have two credit cards with a store, and I would like to know, if I close them, is that going to affect my credit?
Store cards are kind of a wounded duck form of credit. If you have multiple major credit cards, which is Visa, MasterCard, American Express, Discover,
mm-hmm.
How many of those four types do you have?
I have three.
Okay. If you want to dump a store card, you can. It's almost better, though, once it's open, just to leave it hanging out there for now.
Okay.
Because obviously, you're handling your credit so well and your score is so good that there's really nothing for you to change from what you're doing, because you're going to be in great shape either way. But I would just leave those store cards as they are. And continued success to you. And Joel, we have just a little bit of time to move to an Ask Clark from ClarkHoward.com. Who do we have an Ask Clark from?
Clark, this one's from Charles. He said, what is your opinion of holding physical silver as an investment?
I'm not a fan of holding physical silver or physical gold. I think it's better to hold a precious metals fund or a gold fund, where when you buy actual silver, you buy actual gold. You have to store the stuff. You have to worry somebody might steal it, and you pay a buy-sell spread, where what you can buy it for is a much higher price than what you can then turn around and sell it for, and they call that the buy-sell spread. So holding the actual precious metal, silver, gold, whatever, is cool. I mean, it's really fun to look at. It's shiny. It's bright. It's all those things. But it's a better idea to buy a fund, which is kind of dull and kind of boring. It's where you're buying kind of like a stock, where they own behind the scenes the precious metal or gold. And if you go on ClarkHoward.com where you posted the Ask Clark, you can read my guide to buying a precious metal fund or a gold fund and understand how they work and how much more effectively you're investing your money than you are owning gold or silver. Just know it's very risky owning gold or silver because of the rapid moves up or down that they make. Follow me at facebook.com/ClarkHoward. Our web address, clark.com. When you got a question for me, go clark.com/ask. Brandon is with us. Hello, Brandon. How are you doing?
I'm good. Doing good, Clark. How are you?
Great, thank you. And you have something in your life that is no fun.
Correct. Now, it's not a lot. It's about 15,000.
15,000, you said?
No, 15,000, correct.
I thought, you said not a lot, and I thought I heard you say 50. So I was like, your definition of not a lot, so you must have been saying 15. I'm glad that's what you were saying.
Yes, sir. Now, we're expecting our first child in 2 months, and I have a question about what we should do about his college fund versus that student debt. See, my parents actually paid for most of my college education, and my wife's family did not, and we're a little bit split about this. Now, I've already gone ahead and created a college 529 fund for our son, but I need the guidance. You know, my wife still has that $15,000 out there, and we need to know, would it be wiser to pay off her student debt before contributing to the college fund, or should we do something else?
Well, first I need to know, the student loans that she has outstanding, are they all federal?
I believe they are, yes.
And do you know what the interest rates are on those loans?
I do not.
Okay. So before you can make a good decision on that, you need to know what the interest rate levels are. If the interest rates on the student loans are 5% or above, that's the priority, is to pay those loans off. And because you need to respect your wife's philosophy, if she believes that the higher priority is taking care of your own finances and leaving a child on his or her own for college, you need to respect her and then at some point compromise on that. But I would say before you even think about the 529 for the baby, you need to make sure that you and your wife are saving the absolute maximum you can under the law in retirement accounts, because there are multiple ways to pay for college and there's no scholarship plans for retirement.
Right.
What do each of you and your wife have as retirement choices? Do you either you have a retirement plan available to you at work?
I do. We both do. I have right now in my 401k, I have right about $90,000. And she has a little bit over $15,000.
Okay. So you're saving what percent of your pay?
20%.
Fantastic. You don't know proud that makes me, Brandon.
Well, thank you. But that's the thing. I'm making up for my 20s and early 30s. I'm 40 years old now, so I feel like we need to.
So keep doing that. But she's at 15. What percent of her pay is she saving?
I believe she's saving 9%.
Okay, so it would be a higher priority for her once she finishes paying off the student loan debt, or you do that together, to put the effort and emphasis on putting more money for her retirement than to save for your baby's college. Because, again, college, you got so many options. You have community college, scholarships, work while you're in college, and retirement. You don't have all those options. So I'm much more on this one. I'm more with her than I am with you.
Well, it's not like we're really split, because we really do think alike. It's just something that we both had that question. You know, was this the right path? And we felt like there was nobody better than the expert to go to than you.
Oh, I was going to say, to go to the expert, you couldn't find the expert, so you came to me. But anyway, as far as how you would proceed with you each seeing it a different priority, Once you got the student loan debt out of the way, she's dramatically increased how much she's saving for retirement. You're saving 20%. If there's money still left over, then as the lower priority financially, then the compromise for the two of you is you do start putting some money aside for your college, for your child's college and a 529. And congratulations on the baby.
You know, when you're going to buy a car, pricing information is great and necessary. But there's more to doing it than just the price. There's the actual buying experience. If you want to enjoy a better one, you should go to a True Car certified dealer. They're there to help you find the car that you want, and they're also what make True Car unique. With True Car, you can connect with a local certified dealer that you choose, so you can lock in a guaranteed savings off the MSRP and enjoy a totally better buying experience. And by better, they also mean faster. Over 2 million cars have already been sold to True Car users who have visited their True Car certified dealer. And there are over 11,000 True Car certified dealers nationwide, so it's probably pretty easy to find one near you. And check this, for a new car, average True Car users save $3,279 off MSRP. All right, so you're probably wondering, how do I do this? It's easy. Just go to TrueCar.com or, right there on your phone, download the True Car app. You can find the car you want, see the True Car pricing curve, which shows you what other people in your area paid for the same car, and that way you can know you're getting a good price and feel confident. Then you'll get a guaranteed savings certificate from the True Car certified dealer. Go to the dealer, and your guaranteed savings off MSRP will be honored, and you enjoy a quick, easy experience. How's that for car buying? So when you're ready to buy a new car, or even a used one, visit TrueCar.com or download the True Car app and enjoy the better car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
Glad you're with us on the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you learning ways to save more and spend less. And don't let anyone ever rip you off. Coming up in a half hour, something that's come up, things may come in waves. I've had a number of calls about the right way to buy appliances, should you insure them and all that. I'm going to give you a briefing on how to buy those things in 30 minutes. And I wanted to tell you something that is an area I'm going to step into right now that is so far out of my normal area of discussion with you, but it's something that has been on my mind for a long time. So many of us as Americans have guns in our home for either, you know, hunters have rifles and others may have handguns for personal security or whatever reason. And it's inevitable there'll be these tragic stories that you hear reported, see reported, where a child gets a hold of a handgun in the house, in the car, may shoot a parent, shoot a sibling, shoot themselves. And tragically, often people die in these accidental shootings where a gun ends up in the hands of a kid. So people are always looking for solutions. And one of them in the home are these fingerprint reading gun safes. And in our case, we have a couple of rifles. And we keep those rifles way up high, up 12 feet, where we even have to use a little stepladder to get to them to make sure they're not, we don't have young kids anymore, but make sure they're not accessible if somebody has kids over at our house or whatever. Our kids know to stay away from them. But I'm so interested and impressed with what a teenager did. The guy came up with what's known as a smart gun. The teenager is from Colorado. His name is Kai. I read a story about him in the Wall Street Journal. And he, as a teenager, has developed a technology for a fingerprint reading phone. He spent 4 years developing it. And it allows you to make sure that that gun cannot be fired by anybody except you. If somebody got your gun, a burglar or intruder, let's say, and wanted to use that gun, they can't because their fingerprint doesn't match. Your kid couldn't use it. And this product is apparently going to be on the market pretty soon. Every precious life of a child that's lost because of a gun that a child gets a hold of, you know, a little toddler or whatever, it's one way too many. And I encourage you to develop an action plan if you do have weapons in your house or your car to keep those guns safe, out of harm's way, away from that child. And I just so salute this teenager coming up with this product that now has funding behind it and is coming to market. By the way, the kid has been accepted at MIT, one of the nation's, I guess, five best universities in the country. That was redundant to say nation, country. Anyway, and he deferred admission so he could complete the work on the fingerprint reading gun. James joins us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, James.
Hello, how are you, Clark?
I'm having a great day, thank you.
That's good. It's a pleasure to talk to you. My former employer has sent me an offer to roll my pension plan into a IRA. Actually, they give me like three options. I can either take the lump sum, which I know better than to do that from listening to you, and or to roll it into an IRA, or to just leave it where it's at and collect the benefits when I turn 65.
So I don't know if this is a coincidence or if you work for the same, you worked for the same employer of two other callers recently, because you're the third person in recent weeks who has called with that same option that you laid out.
Hmm.
And so it may be that a particular employer is trying to get old employees, former employees, off their pension books.
Right.
And that's why they're offering the lump sum or the rollover into an IRA. So what's generally better is to take the payout over your lifetime that they're trying to get you not to take.
Okay.
It's almost always, not 100% of the time, but probably somewhere around 99% of the time. And there could be a rare circumstance that would not be true, although I haven't seen it. Almost always, it's better for you to not take either thing they're trying to tempt you with and just wait till you're 65 and then have guaranteed lifetime income from them.
Okay. Well, that's kind of what I was thinking, but I wasn't sure. I mean, I've heard a lot about the IRA, so I wasn't sure if that was something I should do or not.
Well, the beauty of the pension that they'll pay you is that you won't have to worry about making decisions that maybe weren't the best with how you'd invest that money. You know, for as long as you live, they're going to send you that check, kind of like how Social Security works, that you get a check the rest of your life. But with Social Security, they'll inflation adjust it over the years. With that pension, normally, it'll stay the same amount for as long as you live.
Right. Now as long as I live, but as if I were to pass, my wife would not get any of that pension, correct?
Well, that depends on the options offered. Usually you'll have an option for 100% survivor benefit, 75% survivor benefit, or 50% survivor benefit.
Okay.
And generally people will settle in at 75%,
okay,
where you'll reduce your benefit, and then it'll be a benefit that will continue for your bride for as long as she lives. You sacrifice a current check for the fact that guys usually don't live as long as women, and you will see to it that she doesn't end up a pauper later on by taking a smaller benefit while you're living.
Okay. I was just kind of curious about that because I figured that if I went with the IRA, she could continue to collect on that. But
with the pension, I assume if you dig into the options, there will be a survivor benefit part of it.
Okay. I will dig into that a little bit further.
Okay.
All righty. Thank you very
Thanks.
Much, Clark.
Have a great day. And it's no surprise employers have had a big run-up in the value of their pensions with the recovery in the stock market the last 5 years. And it's a great time for them financially to try to convince people to exit their pension plans while the pension plans are so well funded. So that's why a lot of people, and the three individuals who called recently, may be from completely unrelated companies, because it's kind of an end thing now in corporate America to try to get you to waive your pension benefit in return for a cash payment. But as I said, avoid that temptation almost always. Annie's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Annie.
Hi, Howard. It's a great pleasure talking to you. I've been a big fan for a long time.
Well, I'm glad you're with us. How can I serve you?
Actually, I have a lot of questions, but the main thing that I wrote to you is I want to know if it's okay if I co-sign with my daughter to buy a house, because I know they actually have a condo right now. She's married, but since they got caught on that, you know, the high interest and the price of the condo went down, so I would like to see if I can, co-sign with my daughter to buy a house in her name and my name.
I hate co-signing. And generally with a house, you would be a co-owner of the house and a co-borrower with her in most states. And you could do that, but I'm going to make a different suggestion, because putting yourself in that, the way you're thinking of it as a co-signer, if she doesn't make the payments, you get stuck with the debt and your credit can be ruined.
She got a good credit. I actually established her credit when, you know, she's working. She got a real good job. And
okay.
I've been convincing her at first that maybe we can use the VA loan, because we paid our house already, and we even the rental house. So actually, we wanted to buy another house. I know I'm getting to the age, the retirement age, but I know before you said, I heard you saying that, you know, we should have another, you know, investment.
Sure.
For the retirement. That's why I really want to see.
Okay, let me suggest an alternative that makes me sleep better at night thinking about what I would say to you.
Okay.
And that is, what if you buy the home, you take out the mortgage, and your daughter signs a long-term lease with you, and at the time that you would pass away, or when her finances change, she's done with the condo, that's out of her life and all that, you then sell her the house, or at time of your passing, you give her the house in your will.
Okay.
Because the idea of you being essentially a co-owner and co-borrower with her, that just makes me all kinds of nervous. And you called me asking me what I would do, and what I would do is just that. I would buy it, I would own it, I would borrow the money for it, and I would have her be my tenant until circumstances in life change. That's the best way to protect yourself and get her what she wants, a nice new place to live. Jackie joins us. Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
So you got a problem that's a dilemma. You want to see if I can help you unwrap it.
Correct.
What's the story?
Well, I got married a couple of years ago, and I've been trying to get him on the Clark Howard plan, because I've been trying to do it for about 5 years now myself. And I keep getting like little surprises, like I just received a letter from an attorney stating that he owed on a credit card that he said was supposed to have been paid off back in 2005. So I'm trying to figure out if I'm supposed to be calling these people to try to get this straightened out.
All right, I'll tell you, the odds are it's not really a lawyer. It may be a collection agency using a name like similar to what a law firm would use, where they say blah, 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 and blah.
Mm-hmm.
And so a debt that old in almost all cases would exceed what's known as statute of limitations, meaning he cannot be sued on the debt, depending on the state and the type of debt, usually 3 to 6 years, although there can be exceptions.
Uh-huh.
So this is probably just an attempt to scavenge a debt, to collect a debt on which there is no legal. You said it was from what year?
He said 2005.
All right, yeah. So it can't be on his credit report, and he can't be sued against it in almost all circumstances. So what you want him to do for you is go on annualcreditreport.com.
Okay.
And pull copies, in this case, of all three of his credit reports. It will be completely free.
Okay.
And then you sit down together and look at them and see if there's any other surprises out there. Because remember, anything older than 7 years cannot be there.
Okay.
And so you'll be able to see what they consider to be the date of last activity. And if they're listing a more recent date of last activity, then he has to challenge that attempt to collect debt within 30 days and say, provide proof that this is, in fact, a valid debt. And once he's done so in writing, odds are, as a scavenger collector, they have no proof, and they'll likely go away. Follow me at facebook.com/ClarkHoward. Our web address, clark.com. When you got a question for me, go clark.com/ask. Right now, we're going to go to your questions you posted for us online and ask Clark. And Joel, who do we have an ask Clark from? Was posted on clarkhoward.com.
Yeah, Clark, this one's from Georgia. She said, are there any annuities that you actually approve of?
Yes. Yes. Stop the presses. There are two annuities that are not cuss words that we can say on a family-oriented show. One is an immediate payout annuity, also sometimes referred to as a life annuity. It is kind of like taking money and setting up your own pension. It gives you a much higher stream of income for the remainder of your life than you could ever generate on your own from your own investments. Works pretty simply. You take a pile of money, most often sold as $100,000. You turn over $100,000 to an insurance company in retirement, and then for as long as you live or as short as you live, you have a guaranteed monthly income. They're great. Insurance agents won't talk about them because they don't earn enough commission on them to even drive to your home to have you fill out the paperwork. Second, a longevity annuity. Let's say you have pretty good income to live on in retirement, but you're worried you'll outlive it. A longevity annuity doesn't start usually till you're age 85, but make sure if you outlive age 85 that you're covered the rest of your years, and they're very, very cheap to buy.
Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans proudly supports this podcast. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. It's fast, powerful, and completely online. You see, Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. Hate searching through stacks of old files and paperwork? Well, with Rocket Mortgage, you can easily share your bank statements and pay stubs at the touch of a button. It helps you get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored to your unique financial situation. Even better, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all of this on your phone or tablet. It's a quick online process that you can manage from the convenience of your couch. So if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or buy a home, check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/save. That's quickenloans.com/save. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
Stay tuned for 60 seconds of AP News headlines right after this podcast.
Glad you're with us on the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you learning ways to keep more of what you make? And do I have an area you should do that with? One of the dullest purchases we ever make. Our web address, Clark.com. When you have a question for me, Clark.com/ask. So what is the dullest we ever make? Washer, dryer, dishwasher, refrigerator, freezer. I mean, come on. Dullsville. People in the appliance business have tried to make these things jazzy fancy. Look at the crazy washers and dryers that they're trying to sell us now that are these, well, relatively beautiful looking things. Who cares? It's in a laundry room. All that matters is the clothes get clean. Period. So I was just helping our director of our off-air center, our Team Clark Center, we can get the free off-the-air advice, 45 hours a week, her dryer broke. She was looking at all these really zillion-dollar dryers. And she was frustrated and asked me for help. And we go on the websites of various places. We looked at Home Depot and Lowe's, among others. And we found a dryer that had over 1,000 reviews, and they were off the charts positive. The dryer was a big one. Like, I guess, 7 cubic feet, like, that's really a big dryer. And it was all of $379 with free delivery. Now, people go into an appliance store or one of the big home improvement places and routinely spend more than a grand on a washer, more than a grand on a dryer. Then a lot of them rip you off, charging you big money for those pedestal-y things. What a joke. I mean, what a con job. You make this cute little thing, and then you have this pedestal that costs, I don't know, $10 to make, and then they sell those for a couple hundred dollars. What a terrible ripoff. In Consumer Reports, in their recent ratings on washers and dryers, found a number of them that were very affordable. They just look like ugly washers and dryers. Come on. Who cares if they look institutional? But there are a lot of them you can buy that are cheap that are great. So don't spend great money on that. Dishwashers? Okay, so what matters on a dishwasher? It gets your dishes clean. If you live in a really small place, you need to probably pay a little more to get one that's quiet. But look at the reviews. You don't have to spend a lot to buy one. And the craziness with people spending a few thousand dollars to buy a refrigerator freezer? Are you crazed out of your mind? What is the difference between a $700 side-by-side and a $2,500 side-by-side? $1,800. Nothing else. They both keep your cool things cooled and your cold things freezing. Period. But see, the great irony is that the cheaper refrigerator freezer will prove to be far more reliable than the expensive one because of the units of production. With appliances, the more they make of one, of a mainstream model, the more reliable typically they'll be. As you move up the price ladder, the units of production go down and the reliability goes down too. So it's completely backwards to get that cutesy, fancy front door to the refrigerator freezer. You're spending more money and you're getting something less reliable. So the choice is yours. I've never understood the designer door on refrigerator, freezer. It's your money. You choose what you want and how you want to spend your money. But for my money, reliable and cheap wins every time. And on any of these things, don't waste your money on the incredibly overpriced extended service contracts, extended warranties. You're throwing your money down the disposal if your disposal works. Trish is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Trish.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. Your mom, though, isn't doing so well. What's she facing?
Yeah. She is in a vicious cycle with credit cards. And she's racked up between $25,000 and $35,000. And she is on limited income, hourly wage, and really has no assets and is living on her credit cards now. So I'm wondering if bankruptcy would be an option for her. I'm really not sure. I'm hoping you can help.
Well, first, I can tell in your voice that what you're reacting to is your mom is really feeling stressed about these debts.
Yes.
And the question is, what does your mom own? Does she own her own home?
No.
She's a renter.
A 12-year-old car.
Okay. Likely, there's no reason for her to consider bankruptcy.
Really?
Yeah, and if she can't afford to pay these cards, she just doesn't pay.
Wow.
Because if she has nothing, you can't squeeze blood from a turnip.
Yes.
So what happens in a case like this, if she's broke and she has this debt, she stops paying and she tells each credit card company why. That she's broke, she doesn't have any assets at all, and she cannot afford to pay. Now, then the credit card companies will have the choice of suing her against the debt. How many different credit card companies are there, Trish?
I'm going to say three or four. They're all, a Visa, a MasterCard, a Discover. I know that for sure.
Okay. So she notifies each. She has no ability to pay. And they'll choose whether they want to sue. And even at that point, she doesn't have any need to file for bankruptcy. Only if a credit card company were to sue her and get a judgment, would that be a point at which she would consider filing for bankruptcy.
Okay.
Because the banks are only interested in people that they can actually get money from. If your mom has nothing, truly has nothing, then what will set her free is getting over her angst and fear.
Wow. That's a scary thought.
Well, I mean, she's in a situation where you might think she's painted herself into a corner, and she obviously has with debts. But I want you to know and her to know that she's not permanently painted in that corner.
Okay.
Now, it does mean she will not be able to get credit again.
No, and I think she's done with it.
She's better off without it, because it puts her in a position where she tries to make ends meet by borrowing, and that creates a bigger hole, which then she borrows against and creates a bigger hole again, till we're looking at $35,000.
Exactly.
So I want you to put her mind at ease. Because what are they going to do to her? They're not going to put her in jail, right?
I hope not.
And she has nothing for them to be interested in taking.
Okay.
So it's not the preferred outcome. It would be so much better if she was in a position to be able to pay her debts. But she's not going to be able to.
No, she can't. She really can't. And I wish I could help, but I can't either.
So it's not a matter of bankruptcy is the only answer. Bankruptcy is the last option and significantly down the road.
Okay.
But tell her not to send minimums anymore and inform the cards that she's broke.
Okay.
They'll probably send her a questionnaire. Some credit card companies will. Some of the banks will send a questionnaire asking about what she has, and that'll be real easy for her to fill out because she doesn't have anything.
Yeah.
And likely they'll just be done with her.
Wow. I would have never guessed that.
Well, you know, the credit card companies made a choice to extend her loans on good faith. And she took on more debt than she could handle. And part of what happens in the business, 1% of credit card debts, they end up having to charge off. And hers will be in that
1%. Okay. It's a gamble.
No, it's not a gamble. It's a gamble on their part.
Yes.
Yeah. So if your mom needs to hear that from me, please have her call me and I'll tell her the same thing, and she might then be at peace with it, because I don't want her to be miserable and anxious and afraid to go to the mailbox. I want her to enjoy her later years. And from this point forward, she'll have to live a cash-only existence. Follow me at facebook.com/ClarkHoward. Our web address, clark.com. When you got a question for me, go clark.com/ask. Teresa's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Teresa.
Hi.
Teresa, you're thinking of moving.
We are. Our youngest child is in high school, and we're looking at moving out of California, and we want to know which state would be the best financial decision for us for retirement.
Wow. Well, it's not just a tax question when you're looking for the lowest total cost.
Yeah.
But that certainly does make a difference.
Yes, it does.
What the tax bills will be. And so a lot of people in California have decided, you know, that's not for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because taxes are, especially as your income level rises, the taxes in California can be backbreaking.
Oh, it's horrible.
The number one state that Californians move to is Texas.
Okay.
Because there's no state income tax, and housing in Texas is usually less than half the cost of equivalent housing in California.
Okay.
But that's not the only one that people have moved to. In big numbers, Californians have moved to Utah and Arizona, even though both states have state income taxes. And you're probably well aware that a lot of people have moved to Nevada that has no state income tax and very low living costs.
Yes.
So if you look just at the taxes, people often move to, and they're looking for weather that's decent,
mm-hmm.
in terms of not cold, people tend to move to Tennessee, Texas, or Florida.
Tennessee, Texas, or Florida, okay.
And overall cost of living, though, Florida, because of other issues, is not necessarily a low overall cost of living.
All right.
So how important is weather to you?
I like all four seasons.
Well, you might really enjoy living in Tennessee.
Tennessee, yeah.
But cost is not everything.
No, it's not. Quality of life is just as much important also.
So wherever, I would think it would be great to go exploring, go check out a state, see what it's like.
Well, that's why we contacted you, is we our son is still in high school, so we're going to go ahead and start looking around. So you've given us a starter place.
Well, you know, Tennessee has every possibility of mountains, more rural areas, mm-hmm. big cities. And what part of California do you live in, Teresa?
We're in northern Redding.
Okay. So you're not in one of the very large metro areas. You're in an area where housing is less expensive.
Yes.
So you're not going to see as dramatic a difference in housing costs at all going from Redding to another state. The big yeah. advantage for you will be on the tax side.
On the tax side, correct.
So go explore.
All right.
Go check it out.
All right.
And,
thank you.
And I'll tell you, there's one big disadvantage, though. Things you're used to watching earlier in the day, particularly sports events,
uh-huh.
you don't get much sleep when they don't end till midnight Eastern time. So that is the one big sacrifice, moving back east from California. Welcome back to the Clark Howard Show. I'm so happy you're tuning in and joining us. But I also want you to remember, if you ever can't tune in, you can always go to our on-demand section of Clark.com and catch up. We post each day's Clark Howard Show after it airs as a full-length podcast, so you never have to miss a minute. Speaking of podcasts, if you had a chance to listen to the Empowerment Zone podcast, it's also in the on-demand section of Clark.com, hosted by our very own producer, Kim. And Kim, I couldn't get over your last episode, how touching it was. What an incredible story.
Thanks, Clark. And for those of you who hadn't had a chance to listen to it yet, the last episode is called Nourishment, and it's the story behind a charity called The Giving Kitchen. And yeah, it definitely pulled on some heartstrings.
Well, it's been a couple of weeks. Do you have a new episode up yet?
I sure do. I posted one today, and I think you're really going to like it. It's actually a story that you already know a little bit about. Do you remember last year when that CEO made headlines for instituting a $70,000 minimum wage for all of his employees?
Oh, yeah, I remember that, but who was he? I don't remember his name.
Yeah. So his name was Dan Price, and he's the CEO of a credit card processing company called Gravity Payments. And like you, I was reading a lot of stories about it, but I never really felt like I got the whole story. And I started to wonder what happened next.
Our whole team was so, appreciative of, half of our staff, had, a substantial increase in income overnight. But he took this big risk and he did it for everybody. And, the sacrifice he made was not only, a financial sacrifice, but also his personal time. And then once he started to make headlines, it was also his personal life. So he was sacrificing all of this so that his team could afford a living wage. I mean, that was something pretty incredible. So there's a lot of people that wanted to do something for him. That felt, they wanted to do something as a token of gratitude.
And Clark, wait till you find out what they actually did. You're going to love this.
Okay, Kim, you're getting good with those teases. I need to work on that. We'll look forward to finding out. Listeners, you can hear the Empowerment Zone podcast at clark.com/empowerment zone or download it from iTunes or wherever your favorite podcasting place would be.
Thanks for listening to the Clark Howard Podcast. Download new episodes every Monday through Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.